The Kevin Smith Show, unique in the galaxy.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us for the very, very first time, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. Quick announcement. I think I made this announcement earlier this week, but I'm not sure. And I want to be sure that I do. Remember the poll that we had where I said the question was, is there a nebula made of beer? And that was up for some time. A lot of people voted in that poll. And the answer is, well, yes, there is. It is in our galaxy. But I said that it is made of methyl alcohol. In fact, it is ethyl alcohol. One of our listeners was kind enough to write in and point out that I had said methyl when I meant ethyl. It is ethyl alcohol. The listener was concerned that someone might decide to rush out and get some methyl alcohol and drink it and because that's what this galaxy or this nebula is made of. I can't imagine that anybody would do that, but don't. It's dangerous. It's poisonous. Methyl alcohol will kill you. It is ethyl alcohol. You know that I very often challenge the data that we are presented about the true conditions on Mars. And I try whenever I can to present to you NASA's own evidence that shows we're not being told the truth, in my opinion. We're not being told the truth about the true conditions on Mars. Well, today I received from one of our listeners, I received a link to a story out of NASA. They have developed for the next Mars rover that's going up. It's going to be a big one. And so they've developed the largest parachute that they've ever used in landing anything on Mars. It's 52 feet in diameter. And I was looking at this picture, and there were several pictures, additional pictures that were included in the article. But it shows the parachute in a wind tunnel being tested, and it's all inflated. The parachute is all open. And then I was reading the article, and the article talks about how the atmosphere density on Mars is less than 1% of that of Earth. Well, the question that I have is, NASA, did you reduce the atmospheric density in the wind tunnel to 0.07%, which is what your site publishes as the density of the atmosphere on Mars? Did you reduce that atmospheric density in the wind tunnel to that? And the answer to that is, well, no. Here's one of the pictures, and if you will just notice, there is a man standing in the wind tunnel. Had they reduced the atmospheric density to 1% or less and then ran this test, that guy would be dead. But he isn't dead. There he is standing there, all healthy and alive, all right? And so I have to say, this photograph, while a real photograph of a real test of the parachute, I have to say we're looking at a bogus test. Yeah, so you can open the parachute with Earth density atmosphere? Okay. We'll be back with Sean Castile right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, Sean Castile. Sean Castile is a well-known UFO journalist, but he is also a well-known published author with several titles to his credit. Among them, this is not all of them, but among them, UFOs, Prophecy, and the End of Time, Signs and Symbols of the Second Coming, The Excluded Books of the Bible, Our Alien Planet, This Eerie Earth, Nikola Tesla, Journey to Mars, Are We Already There?, and Nikola Tesla's Death Ray and the Columbia Space Shuttle Disaster. Sean, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thanks, Kevin. It's good to be here.
Now, when you were with us before, I think we pretty much focused on the Nikola Tesla Journey to Mars, Are We Already There? I think we pretty much focused on that. Let me tell you what has gone before you and why I would like to focus where we will focus tonight. Last night, I did something brand new. I've never done it before. I called it Worry Night, and I invited our audience to call in and share with us, talk with us about the things within our genre that have them a little bit concerned, a little bit worried. Things like, you know, what's going to happen in 2012? Is Planet X coming? And if it is, what is that going to do to us, for us, or against us, etc.? There were all types of topics that people called in and talked about. And so I thought it would be good tonight for us to focus on your book, UFOs, Prophecy, and the End of Time. And if you have no problem with us focusing on that, we'll begin.
Okay.
So let me begin with what caused you to choose that topic for a book.
Well, that had always been my primary interest. I've converted to Christianity in 1978 after a near-fatal accident. The hospital chaplain sort of worked me through a Christian conversion. So I had a lot of really deep-felt Christian feelings. And when I began to learn more and more about the UFO, alien abduction phenomena, etc., I tended to take those Christian feelings and approach UFOs through that kind of filter. And I've always believed that the UFOs are basically, and the aliens who pilot the UFOs are basically angelic creatures. Creatures who are written about in the Bible and are seen by us through, you know, our own technological filter that calls them aliens in the modern era. But the religious focus was always there for me personally. As a journalist, I didn't get to write from that point of view very much. I interviewed a lot of people, but my religious viewpoint wasn't really called for as a journalist. But when Tim Beckley at Interlight Books, Global Communications, he offered me the chance to do a book, that's what I suggested to him. I said, how about this for a topic, UFOs, Prophecy, and the End of Time? And he went for it, said, that's a good title, let's go for it. So that was my first book, and in a lot of ways, it's still my favorite.
Well, even though that was your first book, it seems, at least I have to say, based on the audience response last night, that these sorts of topics are very much in people's minds these days. Let me tell you, I got a lot of email in the past 24 hours where, and let me explain why, and then you'll understand this. After we do the live show, and we have, you know, a vast audience during the live show around the world, but then we load, we capture that, and we load it onto the website, and it's available for free for the next 24 hours. And so we have a lot of people around the world who catch the show at some other time other than live, and at least as large an audience as we have for the live audience. So for 24 hours, a show generates email. And so for the past 24 hours, I've been getting email from people who are saying, you know, that, look, you know, I don't know what's coming, but I can sense something big is about to happen. And for some people, you know, they sense that something big and bad is about to happen. Some people think it's big and good. Some people have no idea. They just, something's up. Have you run into that? Have you, as a journalist, you sort of keep your fingers on the pulse of our culture. Have you kind of run into this thing that a lot of people are sensing something is up?
Well, I know what you're saying, I think, but I think that's generally always the case. I mean, you had the guys who used to walk around in Central Park in New York with a sign that says the end is near. I think we've had that expectation for a long, long time. Once we were able to develop nuclear power and you know, atomic weapons and so forth, we crossed a major line there that put us in a danger zone collectively. And there's been that kind of anxiety since, you know, the late 40s, since the advent of nuclear weapons, since Kenneth Arnold's first UFO sighting. All these factors have started to coalesce and cause a great deal of public stress that the kind of stress we never knew before. I mean, Time magazine, at least once a year, it'll do a cover story on stress, how stressed out Americans are by what's going on. So, I mean, I really don't have any magic way to relieve that stress. I think, you know, it probably is reasonable to worry. We have no idea. We live in dread of something unknown, but there's no easy way to just wipe that dread away.
Okay, in your book, you take a look at several strains of prophecy: Mayan, Aztec, Nostradamus, the Bible. When you do that, did you find that? Well, it seems to me, you know, all of those prophecies are generated within cultures that are separated by hundreds, if not thousands, of years in some cases. All separated geographically. They come from all over the world geographically. Did you find that they were really very different from each other, or do they have some common denominators?
I understand what you're saying. They're perfectly. What's amazing is how alike they are.
Mm-hmm.
How they all prophesy this terrible period of darkness and shame and evil and whatever. But they also lead toward a better outcome. I mean, the darkness comes before the light.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, there's a woman I interviewed for the book who was talking about Aztec or Mayan symbolism, and they have a word called Pachacuti, which essentially means the world turned upside down, and that's one of the predictions they make. The world will appear to have turned upside down, similar to what the Book of Daniel says. The Book of Daniel in the Bible prophesies a time of trouble such as there has never been.
So now, when they say it will appear as if the world has turned upside down, are they talking about sort of metaphorically because everything is so chaotic, or are they talking about an actual pole shift where the world, the south becomes the north?
I think it was more of a metaphorical thing, the idea of the world system being turned upside down,
mm-hmm.
a total upheaval of the world as we know it. Which, you know, it's similar to what the Bible says. I mean, when the Bible prophesies things like the Antichrist and the plagues and you know, huge chunks of the world being destroyed, it's essentially the same concept, Pachacuti, the world turned upside down, I think.
Okay, now, do you, when you look at all these various strains of prophecy, do you consider them to be speaking of the times in which we live, or is it time that has already passed, or is it time some point far into the future?
That's a hard one to answer, because the Book of Revelations has certainly been interpreted that way before. There are some people who think it was all fulfilled in the time of Rome by the Caesars. The Caesars were the great Antichrist. There are people who think it's being fulfilled around us right now. And there are people who are called futurists, millennium futurists or something like that. I forget exactly what the technical term is. So certainly all three interpretations of past, present, and future are out there. And, you know, I think it's, you know, probably one of the most basic truths about prophecy, like the Bible and Nostradamus, is you don't really understand the prophecy except in hindsight. After it's been literally fulfilled, then you understand what the language meant. But almost nobody is able to, like, read the Book of Revelation and then draw a chronology of the future that is accurate. It just can't be done. In fact, I have a buddy in Oklahoma City, Gary Stearman, who works for a ministry devoted to prophecy, and he said, you know, the fact is the Book of Revelation is written in symbolic language, and no matter how you go over it, no matter how painstakingly you examine each and every verse, you cannot put together a logical chronology of the near future. The symbolism is going to be fulfilled in ways that we just don't understand or we can't anticipate.
Okay, now let me ask you, because of the fact you wrote a book about prophecy, let me ask you this. Since almost all prophecies are written in language that, as you say, make it virtually impossible to really understand until you look back at it after it's happened, what's the purpose? I mean, why tell us that something's going to happen and then confuse it and scramble it so that we don't know what or when, and then we get hit by this storm, and if we happen to survive it, we can look back and say, oh, yeah. What's the purpose in that?
I don't know. See, I mean, that's like asking what motivates God, what motivates the aliens, what their personal motivations are. I don't think we as mortals can answer that. I think that's just something that they, being, you know, the gods, prefer to do. They prefer to hint darkly about the future rather than just spell it out. But as to why they use that method, I have no idea.
Well, would it be a logical, rational approach then for us, since they don't want to just come clean and say what's on their mind and make it clear for us? Wouldn't it make sense for us to just say, oh, yeah, okay, and just not put a lot of stock into these prophecies?
Which I think is what most people do. I think most people don't put a lot of stock into prophecies. And the people that are concerned have their own personal reasons for being concerned. I mean, it comes down to your personal relationship with whatever you think is a deity, I think. And an exact right way to respond, I don't think there is one. I think we're all in the dark about that. We're all hoping for some kind of salvation, but we don't really know any method that we can generate within ourselves to do that. And I mean, in a sense, we're helpless, and in another sense, we're held accountable. I mean, it's just one of those philosophical puzzles that the mortal mind just can't solve.
Okay, are there any of these various strains of prophecy that you consider to be more reliable than the others? And if so, why?
Well, I just think from my personal point of view, the Bible and Nostradamus to me are the most dependable. I mean, it's hard to make a case for either one of them being totally factually right all the time. And of course, that's another thing. The prophets themselves are flawed. I mean, the Apostle Paul in the New Testament talks about the fact that we as believers only prophesy in part. We're not prophesying the complete truth. We're not 100% accurate because we're flawed human beings. So I believe in the Book of Revelations, but I don't believe that it is a flawless piece of work. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's the work of a mortal human being, and it's as flawed as anything else that mortals do. So I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say whether to worry or not. I mean, I used to think, when I first converted back in 1978, I thought it was all going to happen right then. I mean, that was, you know, that was more than 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now I wonder if it's even going to happen in my lifetime. I mean, our sense of logic, our sense of time and logic is a human mortal sense of time and logic. It's not God's schedule. Who knows what God's schedule really is? The danger is when you think you know. It's when you think you have it all figured out and you really believe you have the answer. then 99% of the time you're going to be completely wrong. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Question.
And of course, by prophecy being written in clouded language, it can scare the living devil out of every generation and thus serve a purpose. And each generation can believe, okay, all of this is going to happen in my lifetime. And then it doesn't. And the next generation picks it up and says, oh, okay, well, they miscalculated. It's going to happen in our lifetime.
Right.
And so it passes from one generation to another until over 2,000 years have passed, and people are still scared of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's very true. I mean, when Christ died, back in, you know, the year 33, 34, whatever, when he died back then, people thought his second coming was just around the corner, just a few days around the corner. And as you say, 2,000 years have gone by without the second coming, which is not to say that it won't happen. I mean, I believe the second coming will happen as a Christian believer. But in terms of understanding the timing of it, you know, 2,000 years ago, they thought it was going to happen right then.
Uh-huh.
There's always been that expectation that it's so soon. Because I think people really want that. They really want the world to become like a paradise or something. They want Christ to restore their sense of worth and value and everything.
Well, I think, you know, people who have been raised in a Christian home or a Christian environment, and that's been sort of, you know, their programming, would want that. I'm not sure that others would.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, I have people that are Buddhists that send me email and say, you know, something's up. I have people that are Muslim that send me email. And they say, I can tell something big is about to happen. Jewish people, you know, while it is true there have always been people holding up a sign in Central Park saying the end is near, I have not seen among the general public worldwide, and these emails come from around the world. We're in 95 countries, and I'm getting emails from a lot of people around the world who are saying this same thing. I have never seen as much widespread expression, many different cultures, different religious backgrounds, different political backgrounds, many different countries, and people saying, I sense that something big is about to happen. And I've never seen that before. I've been doing the show for 9 years, and in 9 years I've never had that before. One of the things that people seem to be very uptight about is 2012. Because we're not going to have time to get into this 2012 thing until we come back from the break. But I'll go ahead and sort of set it up a little bit. People are very, very tied up about 2012. And apparently that date has come up in quite a number of prophecies. It's not just the Mayan calendar. Apparently that's come up in the Bible code. Apparently that's come up in Nostradamus, etc. And so when we come back from this break that's about to start, we'll sort of talk about 2012 a little bit and what you think we ought to be focused on there. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Sean Castile. Sean, whenever we went away for break, I had sort of set up what we're going to talk about for the next few minutes, and that is a great deal of concern that people have about 2012. And primarily, this came into prominence because of the Mayan calendar. But there are other strains of prophecy that seem to focus on 2012 as well. In your research for this book, what did you come up with about 2012?
Well, I didn't really talk a lot about 2012 in the book. I mean, that the book came out in 2003, which was before a lot of that discussion as I had really started. I don't know what to say about it personally. I mean, it's one of those things where I just defer judgment. I defer any kind of strong opinion. The obvious jokes about it was the Mayans just ran out of stone or something. There was nothing left to carve. But I have heard recently, as you say, that the 2012 reference has turned up in the Bible code as well, which tends to make me take it a little more seriously than before. I don't know exactly what to say. I mean, it could be the beginning of the apocalypse. It could be the end of the apocalypse.
What do the Mayans say about these end times?
You kind of got me there. I don't really have any knowledge on specific knowledge about what the Mayans say about it, but
well, I don't mean now what they say about 2012, but you know, just the end times prophecies. And
like I was saying earlier, they also predict a time of turmoil and upheaval, followed by a golden age, a new golden age where the gods return and live peaceably among us. All the prophetic patterns from all the different cultures are that way.
Mm-hmm.
Time of terrible darkness followed by deliverance into light. And, you know, it's not just a matter of Jesus. I mean, Jesus was not a religious bigot. I mean, he wasn't based on, you know, what church you went to, whether you were Jewish or Muslim or whatever. One of the Old Testament prophets talks about the Lord wants people to have the law of God written in their hearts, not to merely practice the outer trappings of a religion, but to be good within their hearts. And anybody can do that. Anybody anywhere in the world can have that basic moral integrity inside them.
Well, you know, I have said, and of course every time I mention, all you have to do if you really want to get a lot of email is mention Jesus or Muhammad. You're going to get email. But I've said very often, the thing that got Jesus into trouble the most was he was not religious. He was spiritual, but he was not religious, and he poked religion in the eye frequently. And
he was so much in rebellion against the Jewish establishment. I mean, that was part of what he was, but he was also, at the same time, he was seamlessly a part of that same Jewish tradition. He was an extension of Jewish tradition that they just weren't ready for, is what I think it was.
All right, let's talk about UFOs. Now, you said that you view the occupants as being angelic beings. I want to get into that in a moment, but I want to mention something and get your reaction to it. Today, I read, I guess you're familiar with Filer's Files.
I got one the other day, too. I haven't looked at it closely yet.
I'll tell you what, there's an amazing statement in there by Lord Mountbatten. You may remember him. He was an admiral, and he was the last viceroy of India when Britain used to rule India, and he engineered independence for India, and they loved him and invited him to stay and be their governor. And but he also was in charge of the complete reorganization of the British military and all kinds of things. This guy was, I mean, he was like an Eisenhower or a MacArthur, something like that, but on that level. He was asked what he thought about UFOs, and he said that they are from other planets, and he viewed them as being living entities. Rather than having occupants, they themselves are the living entities.
Right.
What do you think? Is that the case, or do they have occupants, or is it both?
I don't know. That's a good one. That's a tough one. I've heard that theory before, that the ships themselves are the actual life form. They're the actual living alien life form.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's true, though. I think when you look at that really good photos of UFOs, I think it's pretty obvious. You're looking at something that was crafted out of metal, and you can almost see the nuts and bolts sometimes in some of the photos. Even if they are real, it definitely looks like a piece of metal that was physically manufactured, not a living entity. But I have heard the other theory before, because they do so many things that we can't explain. Like, you know, they defy physics, and they switch on and off. They disappear, they reappear, they morph into one from one thing into the other. Sometimes the human eye looking at it can't always tell that it's not something alive. And maybe, you know, for all we know, it may be some combination of the two things. There are alien occupants inside, but the ship also has some kind of alive malleability to it.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it able to do those things.
Why do you think the occupants of UFOs are angelic beings?
Well, I just think they show a basic concern for human beings. So they show a basic concern for our collective future. People always talk about how they're traumatized by the experience, but I don't think the aliens intend to frighten people. I mean, there are so many scenes in the abduction literature where they'll just put their hand on a person's forehead and the person will feel totally becalmed and all the pain will go away. It's you know, there are a lot of complicated medical procedures that people think are monstrous. Something, you know, they're taking people against their will and performing all kinds of medical doctoring of the way people naturally are. But to my mind, what I think a lot of that is, I think they're preparing our bodies to change into something immortal. I mean, the Apostle Paul talked about that, about us, you know, shedding the mortal coil and becoming immortal. And I think that's got a lot to do with the medical stuff and the implants they put in and stuff like that. They have a medical purpose known only to them, but it's a positive medical purpose. It's something that's going to change man for the better.
Well, now, since you have written this book, which includes biblical prophecies, and since you've been talking about the book of Revelation and biblical prophecies, let me bring one up. There is a place in the book of Revelation where, if what you're saying is correct, I would say it coincides with what you're saying about that they are preparing people's bodies to change into something immortal. Because in Revelation, there is a place where he sends out the angels to start marking those who are his followers.
Exactly. The seal of God inside the forehead, right?
Yep. So you think that's what's happening here?
Definitely. That's one I have a lot of faith in. And, you know, the seal of God inside the forehead, I mean, a lot of times an abductee, they'll insert a needle up to a person's nose, and then it goes straight into the brain. They enter the brain through the nasal cavity and stick something in there. In fact, Willie Strieber's had his head x-rayed or CAT scanned or whatever, and they do find the metal in there. There's some kind of, you know, implant is in there, but it's surgically impossible to remove it. They couldn't remove it without giving him brain damage or something, but they can tell that it's in there. And, of course, Roger Lear, who's done so many implant removal surgeries, you're familiar with Roger Lear, right?
Yeah, he's been on the show. And, in fact, I know him personally. Yeah.
Yeah, good. Well, you know, he's always told me that when they do remove these implants, like from a foot or an ankle or something, someplace where it's safe to take it, they're surrounded by this membrane that we medically are not able to duplicate. But there's something magical about this membrane that keeps it from causing inflammation. If we could figure out how to make it, we could wrap like a liver or something in it, and we would never have to worry about an organ being rejected, because whatever this membrane is, it fits seamlessly with the body, and there's no inflammation and no tendency to reject it. So they know exactly what they're doing with that. They know exactly how to put this hardware in us, so to speak, and have it not be rejected, have it fit with our body, harmoniously or whatever.
You know, it would seem to me that if this is that seal of God that's spoken of in Revelation, they wouldn't be putting it in elbows and ankles and places where you could get to it. So if there are implants in those places, perhaps it is not the same group of extraterrestrials, and maybe they are not the angels. Maybe they are something evil.
I don't know. I understand what you're saying there, but I would not tend to agree with that. I think it's part of the same package. The fact that it doesn't mention implants in other places, that doesn't really bother me. That doesn't make me think that the other implants aren't equally as angelic. One, you've heard of the abductee Betty Andreasen Luca.
Sure.
In one of her experiences, her eye was removed and then reinserted. And she thinks they may have been inserting some kind of camera in there, some kind of camera device, so they can, you know, look right through her eyes and see it like a camera image back on the ship or something. So they have a lot of different sorts of implants. I do think that the implant program is an angelic program. I really do. And you know, the other side that you're talking about, the evil side, I think that's going to be more a human thing. You know, they've been talking about putting microchips in people's hands for years now. And just, you know, just the fact that that technology even exists is sort of a scary thing. I mean, I don't want to frighten your listeners, but I mean, it just, some people say it's the next step.
Well, I think it probably is the next step. I mean, when you and I were kids, we could not imagine that plastic would replace money to the degree that it has, but it has. And most people don't carry a lot of cash with them anymore. They carry cards, and they use their cards, whether a credit card or a debit card. They use their cards when they buy. And the next step is, if it's a chip, if all that information that's on the card is on a chip and it's in your just under your skin in your hand, you could pass that across a scanner. Nobody could steal it, so you don't have to worry about identity theft. You don't have to worry about losing your cards. It sounds like a really cool option, and a lot of people will go for that. However, those chips, there are quite a number of articles out about the health hazards of those chips because they are constantly transmitting. And that's radiation.
Right.
And so I don't know how accurate the articles are, but there are articles about the dangers, you know, of increased numbers of tumors and so forth. And, of course, that also is part of the prophecies in Revelation, that the people that get this chip develop tumors.
Right.
Well, let me say, the people who get the mark of the beast. Do you get into that in your book?
Not a whole lot, but it is something that I've read a lot about. This is something I am concerned about as, you know, just a citizen of the earth. I mean, I worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a shopping mall the other day, and there was a pet store that had a sign out front that said, "Get your pet microchip today."
Mm-hmm.
So they're selling it for household pets pretty openly.
Yeah, and it's also being marketed as sort of a test market as a way to be able to locate your kids. You won't lose your kids.
Right, yeah, I've heard that one too.
Mm-hmm. All right, look, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this, folks, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Sean Castile, and we're talking about his book. It is called, he's got a bunch of books, but the one that we're discussing here this evening is UFOs, Prophecy, and the End of Time. Sean, we were talking about various aspects of prophecy and UFO occupants and so forth, and you know, how some of the prophecies that are in Revelation can fit with what you're describing as what you, from your perspective, what you think these UFO occupants are up to. But let me ask you this now. As you look at the whole UFO phenomena, do you sort of classify all of these extraterrestrials as being on the side of good?
I don't know. That again, is a real hard one to answer. I mean, sometimes I wonder about the serpent ones, the reptilian ones. You wonder what those guys are about sometimes. But the fact is, you know, the Bible, the book of Isaiah, talks about the flying serpents of the Lord. I mean, it's a brief little reference there, but it does fit the idea of you know, the serpent-type creatures and ships. And, you know, the serpent as evil is certainly an idea in Genesis, an inescapable idea in Genesis. So, I don't know, you just sort of go around in circles about a lot of it. I know that Bud Hopkins, who is not a religious believer by any stretch of the imagination, he talks about the fact that the aliens, the Greys, the Reptilians, the Nordics, he thinks they're all one thing. He thinks, you know, whatever they are, that the three or four different species essentially work together for the same goal. But again, I mean, that's a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
You like to point the finger at the serpents and say, that's all you are is bad, but it is a lot more morally complex than that.
Mm-hmm.
Biblically, it's more complex than that. So,
but you see them all, though, as angelic.
I don't know. I'm afraid this might be something where I haven't really worked out the details of what I believe. I've written about the reptilians, but not very much. I do know from the abductee literature that it's not a matter of, it's not an easy choice to make. Because some people have good experiences with the reptilians, some people have bad experiences with the Nordics. I mean, it's not all an easy pattern of black and white. There's a moral complexity to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to come out and say that all the different species are angelic. And there may be, you know, certain serpents who are heavenly and serpents who have fallen. I mean, from among all the different races, there may be some who are righteous and some who fell a long time ago with Satan. It's hard to say. Kind of mysteries that mortals aren't really intended to know until they're explained to us.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, they're going to sit down and tell us all these mysteries. What all these, this great truth that's been hidden from us for so long, they will finally make it apparent to us, I think.
Do you see these, when you talk about them being angelic, do you see them as being intelligent extraterrestrial races? Or do you see them as being spiritual beings?
I think they have both qualities. I think they have the physical quality of an extraterrestrial race, and they also have the ability to become spiritual creatures. I mean, more than once, an abductee has seen a gray, you know, seen a gray walk up to him and change into a being of light. It just simply morphs, I guess is the word, into a shining godly light. So whatever those boundaries are, they can cross between them, you know, as easily as they want to, as easily as walking across the street, I think.
Well, there are also a lot of people who, not necessarily abductees, but people who have seen them, these extraterrestrials, walk through the walls of their house, that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, I just think that they have both capabilities. They can be solid and physical, or they can be spiritual and immaterial. It's just a matter of whatever suits them at the moment, whatever serves their purpose at the time.
You know, one of the things, I've had a guest on this show who talked about these beings. He's an abductee. They just come through a closed sliding glass door, and they immobilize him and take him out through the same closed door. He just goes through it. So apparently, provided what he's saying is accurate, they have the ability to sort of change how matter works.
Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah, they can change the makeup of the body so that even though it's a physical human body, you can go right through that door. I know what you're saying, yeah.
All right, now, what do you aim at in your book, UFOs, Prophecy, and the End of Time?
Well, I steered very clear of giving any kind of definite answer to any of it. I basically did a survey of people. I interviewed Whitley Strieber, I interviewed the woman who wrote about the Mayans and the Aztecs. I interviewed an expert on Nostradamus. I interviewed Leo Sprinkle, who's one of the early abduction researchers, and he's done a lot of work. He also has a very positive outlook on the aliens. He thinks they're benevolent creatures the same as I do. And I just talked to, you know, various people in the field to get their feelings about prophecy. I also did a chapter on Heaven's Gate. I figured, you know, someone should address that one, since that was such a huge embarrassment to everybody. So there's a chapter in there on Heaven's Gate. When I was researching the Heaven's Gate one, I talked to a biblical scholar named Elaine Pagels, who is really, you know, she's like a superstar biblical scholar. Her books are bestsellers sometimes, like her book on the Gnostic Gospels, for instance. So I was just a survey of expert opinions. I didn't really try to give any definite answers of my own. And some people were critical of me. They say, and I sort of copped out. I should have, you know, stated what my own feelings were. But that wasn't really my purpose. It was more to give a general survey of what's out there among the experts.
All right. Now, early in the show, I mentioned how all of these prophecies are separated by hundreds, in some cases thousands of years, and are generated from within cultures that are separated geographically. They're all around the world. And I asked, you know, wouldn't that mean that they would be very different? And you said, well, it's amazing how much they're alike. So as you surveyed and interviewed all of these various scholars and people who are writing and talking about alien abduction and UFOs and prophecy, what about them? Was there a great deal of difference in the conclusions they came to?
I guess the difference would be in the details. You know, you'd have to read the book and look at some of the details. But for instance, when I interviewed Gary Stearman, his ideas were, you know, different from the non-Christian woman. I'm sorry, I forgot her name. But you know, of course, they're going to differ in some of the minor details. But like I said, the overall pattern of darkness followed by the coming of the light is in all these cultures. And the detailed differences are there. They're worthy of study, but they weren't really the point of the book.
All right. So the point of the book, then, is just to sort of give a panorama of what people are writing and saying about prophecies in the end of time. All right. Now, I want you to get just a little bit personal with us. We've got a couple of minutes here before we go to break. I want you to get a little bit personal with us, and I'm going to ask you, when you look, sitting where you are intellectually, having studied all of this, and then you look at all that's happening around us now, what sort of outlook do you have for the future? Are you fearful or hopeful, or what's your approach?
I don't know. I think it probably changes from moment to moment. As the day goes on, you know, you're hopeful one moment and frightened the next. It's hard to put it all together and you know, to not be afraid. One thing that does worry me, if you want to talk personally, what worries me is North Korea and Iran, mm-hmm. and all their public, their worldwide posturing about their nukes.
Yeah.
It bothers me tremendously that someone like Iran and North Korea are going to have working on nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know.
Yep, that's not a party I think I want to go to.
Right, yeah. Sometimes I think when it's said in Revelation 13 that the false prophet is going to bring fire down from the sky in the sight of all men,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that's like a nuclear terrorist nuclear strike from Iran or North Korea or something like that. There's a reference in Nostradamus to a Mongol king or some kind of oriental warrior-type king. I haven't had a chance to go and quite actually look for that quatrain yet. But that does bother me, the idea that, you know, the Antichrist is going to be something like a religious Islamic fanatic or North Korean, you know, their whacked-out dictator over there. So, personally, that one worries me a little, but, you know. But my brother was talking to me one time about this Bruce Springsteen record that came out, and one of the songs on it was, "It hasn't happened yet." You know, we may worry about the future, but it hasn't happened yet. I mean, that may be the best you can do with all that, really.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Now, we're not going to open the phone lines just yet, but let me warn you, because I know some of you start calling incessantly before we open the phone lines, we're going to use the number that we used last night, which is 623-444-5889, okay? 623-444-5889. It is not yet open, but if it makes you happy, you can begin dialing. Okay, let's go back to the phone and to Sean Castile for just a moment before I open the phone line. Sean, one of the big names that comes up a whole lot in these times is Nikola Tesla. And you've written, one of your books has to do, in fact, a couple of your books have to do with Nikola Tesla. One of them has to do with his death ray. And some people may not be familiar, but he did propose and did start to build, I believe, this death ray that he said he could defend the United States by knocking planes out of the air and ships out of the ocean while they were yet hundreds of miles away.
Right.
As we enter into these very highly technological times, times where a lot of people are saying that they're worried about the possible coming of an apocalypse or the coming of the end of the Mayan calendar, they're worried about a lot of these things. What role do you think Tesla and his technology may be playing in this?
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, the death ray thing. One of my buddies and I were talking about this one time, and he said, you know, in order for a weapon like that to be effective, the enemy has to know you have it, which means basically the world has to know you have it. So I would tend to think that we don't have it yet. We haven't got it to a working stage yet, because if that was so, then we would, you know, we'd be frightening our enemies with it already. You see what I mean? But I don't know. Some people think the HAARP project up in Alaska has got something to do with that. Simply sending out all these electromagnetic pulses into the air will eventually function as a weapon. But I tend to have my doubts about it at this point.
I had two of the people who played key roles in the building, and one of them in the design of HAARP, on the show together one night, and I asked point blank. I said, a lot of people think this thing is a weapon. Has it been weaponized? And they both said no. I said, can it be? And one of them responded, well, yeah, it could be. You can weaponize virtually anything. And he said, however, you couldn't do it in secret. The instant we turn HAARP on, the whole world knows it's on.
Right.
And he said, there's no way you could possibly use that thing and do something secretly. You could do it, but you couldn't do it secretly.
Well, I'm sure that's true. I'm sure that there's so many spy satellites up there from other countries that we don't have too many secrets either. You sometimes wonder what the nature of secrecy even is anymore.
Well, you know, the first aerial photographs that we Americans ever had of Area 51 were from a Russian satellite.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that's true too, yeah.
Yeah, they released them. And so that was the first aerial photographs that we ever had of Area 51 were from a Russian satellite. And, everything they've got, we're probably taking pictures of it. And everything we've got, they're taking pictures of it. And everybody that's got satellites up there is probably taking pictures of everybody else's stuff. So I doubt, as you say, that there are very many secrets, actually. Because of that. All right, I want to open up the telephone line, and the telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you have a question or a comment for Sean Castile, a question or a comment about UFOs, prophecy, and the end of times, or Tesla technology, or anything that falls within that genre, please feel free to call that number and talk with Sean. Now, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, that telephone number works, 623-444-5889. It works. You can call us from any place on earth where there's telephone service. But if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you don't want to make an international long-distance call, you can go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and you can scroll down, and under Sean's photograph, the next thing under that is a link that says Flash Message. And you can click that and send me a message with your question or your comments, and I will be glad to read them, and we'll get Sean to respond to those, okay? Okay, that one is not... I've got a bunch of flash messages here, and I'm going through them. Couple of them were not about the show tonight. All right, this one from Ecuador, Sean. Having interviewed so many people and even one well-known radio host who quit because of the threats to his life, have you also been threatened or paid a visit by agencies that did not have your welfare at heart? Not to my knowledge. A little bit of pressure from a particular agency that happened about a year and a half ago. A little pressure, but no threats as far as I know. I would like to ask about what is your take on the new sci-fi films about aliens, and also do you hear through any of your media contacts as to the reasoning behind this obvious in-your-face overexposure? So let me ask you about that. Sean, you go to the television at night, I guess, really, any time. The only time I get to see television is after midnight. And but you go to the television, and there are all kinds of alien sci-fi movies on all the time. And, I mean, you know, if it's not Star Wars, it's Star Trek, it's Stargate, it's Independence Day, it's Galaxy Quest, it's, you know. So what about that? She's saying, what about all these sci-fi films about aliens? And, you know, what do you think the reasoning is behind this obvious, and I'm quoting, obvious in-your-face overexposure? What do you think?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's pretty obviously an acculturation program, mm-hmm. social programming.
Yeah.
This is the theory that's kicked around most often about that. You know, personally, I love that stuff. I mean, I've got like three different copies of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I mean, I love those kind of movies. The 50s ones are really good, too.
But, well, yeah, I've got a ton of the really old black and white sci-fis. I really like those because, you know, they really didn't have special effects down yet, but they did a pretty good job, even without all the fancy special effects. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi. Did Mr. Wells give you that hat?
No. This hat is a gift from Bill Rayling. And when I'm sitting in here with short sleeves, it's cold in the studio. And if I cover my bald head, then I'm not as cold. And so I've got short sleeves on tonight. I don't know if you can see. Yep, short sleeves. And it's cold in here, so I'm wearing the hat tonight.
Yeah, very, very Harrison Ford there. That's good.
Well, thank you.
My question is, I've been checking the internet, you know, about different flying saucers and trying to figure out, you know, who's flying what. And somehow, some reason, the cylinders are connected with the reptoids. And I was wondering if you or your guest could tell me why that they decide that, and if so, you was talking about that, was it Kanduska, that in Russia where
Tunguska.
ship of that kind possibly saved us from a drastic meteor hit, which I guess would be thanks to the Reptoids. So I was wondering that, and then I think that any ship like the Bible talks, like the wheel and the wheel with the eyes, anything that actually looks alive, mm-hmm. I believe is angelic. I think anything that's produced seems to be made, I believe it's from the other side, the angels or whatever, trying to replicate what God's doing, like Satan's always been doing. That's what I believe on that side. That's all I have, and I'll wait and see what you guys have to say about the cylinder and the Reptoids.
Okay. What do you think about that? Cylindrical shaped UFOs being associated with Reptoids. What do you think?
Well, I it's interesting. It's an interesting theory, but I've never heard that personally myself. I've never seen the different species assigned to X or Y ship or whatever. I don't know if that would be the case in real world terms, but I understand the need to work all that out. Everybody has to do this, work out their personal scheme or schemata for what they think it's all about. So, a working model that makes sense to you and keeps you going through the day.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly don't want to argue with any of that. As to the idea that the manufacturer, just because the ships are a manufactured, technological product, makes them non-angelic, I don't know if I believe that one either. I think it's just an overlay on the topic that I just don't agree with. But like I said, everyone's entitled to work out their own reality. Of course, it's what you have to do every day. So.
All right. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. And, we present here on this show, we present information from a lot of different perspectives. One of the guests that we have on this show frequently, thinks that the alien presence is very real and very hostile to humans. Sean Castile thinks that it's very real, but not hostile to us, but beneficent. So we have a lot of different points of view. And Sean, let me throw mine out there. My position on this has been that I don't really see why they would be a whole lot different from us. When people say, well, what is the alien agenda? Well, that's like saying, what is the human agenda? It is diverse. And a human agenda is, are humans good? Are they hostile? Depends on the human and depends on the situation. And I have not seen anything that would tell me that these aliens would be different from that. But maybe I'm wrong about it. Maybe they are all good. What would you say to that idea that some of them may be good, some of them may be bad, and whether they're hostile or not depends on the situation?
Yeah, well, Zachariah Sitchin talked about that one time. I was in some kind of online chat with Zachariah Sitchin. He said people are always so amazed to find out that the aliens are so much like us, which is sort of an anthropomorphism. Actually, we are like them because we are made in their image. I'm sure they are just as morally complex as people are. I mean, there's shades of light and darkness to them that are similar to us and at the same time light years beyond us. When you try to put things in absolute terms like angels and demons, black and white, good and evil, I mean, on the one hand, that's easy to do, but it's impossible to actually see that working in reality because, the nature of morality is so much more complex than anything we can just put a label on. But, that's just my basic intuitive faith, and I just go with it. I just think they are here to help us and that they are fighting for us against some kind of evil satanic force. I mean, we're not alone against the devil. They're in the trenches fighting along with us. And what form it takes, I that's up to everybody to decide for themselves, I think.
Well, I think, too, whether they're hostile or benevolent towards us is a matter, really, it's going to be a matter of perspective. And let me give you an example. Again, since your book deals with, and we've talked about here on the show, things that are in the Bible, let me use the example of Sodom and Gomorrah. Prior to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, the story in the Bible says that Abraham saw three men coming down the road. They looked like men. He talked with them like men, invited them to eat with him and his family, and they did. One of them turns out to be the Lord.
Right.
One and two of them turn out to be angels that go on down to Sodom and Gomorrah. The people in Sodom and Gomorrah, obviously, not everyone there was wrapped up in all of the tremendous sexual sins that are told about in the Bible. Obviously, they're not all wrapped up in that, and maybe most. So then all of a sudden, fire and brimstone start raining down from the sky to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. I think you would not find anyone, if you could do a public opinion poll of the people who lived in those two towns, I don't think you'd find anybody that would say those two extraterrestrials were benevolent to them. I think you would say they would say they were very hostile to us. So I think whether they're hostile or benevolent is really going to depend on where you happen to be standing when the action starts.
Sure, right. I understand.
All right, let's go to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is Stefan from Quebec City.
Hello, Stefan.
Kevin, my question for Mr. Castile is in regards to the world situation right now and how everything is happening so quickly and so fast. If a savior element or something to that effect occurs in the future, what does he think how does he think it'll happen? And the reason why I ask that is because if a single person is elevated to that status in today's world, if you look at what happens at celebrities or anything like that, does he think that that person would be worshipped and just create a whole bunch of new religions where we'll just fight all over again? Or does he think it'll be a much more stealthy or much more holistic approach?
All right. What do you think about that?
Well, let me make sure I understand the question. You're saying that if a savior element were to fulfill itself on Earth, what form that would take? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, like, I mean, if Jesus came back in a physical body and was recognized as such, you know, look what happens to celebrities in Hollywood right now. We just destroy their lives, basically.
Right, well, I think you're asking what Christ's own religious governments would be like. If Christ were governing the earth, what that would be like. And that is the ultimate question, I think. That is the big question that everybody wants to see answered. I mean, you see different movies and stuff. I'm trying to think of something specifically where someone does manage to take over the earth. Some little outsider group manages to gain a lot of power in, say, in a particular country or something. Like, I don't know, Castro taking over Cuba, just as an example. So after their heroic struggle and after they've inspired the people with all kinds of noble aspirations and so forth, what do they do next? What happens next? And I think that when you're talking about Christ governing the world, that's a total unknown. You're going to be dealing with a ruler whose love and kindness and has just never been known before. The world will never have known anything like that before. So to speculate about the, you know, what that actually will be like, what the working details of that would be, I think is just impossible. But it's something better than according to St. Paul, it's something better that we as mortals can conceive of now. What is awaiting for us is something better than we can even dream of. But again, you know, I mean, Christ won't be just, you know, another celebrity. He won't be just another world ruler. He'll be something different. There'll be a different character to the whole thing that'll be totally different than anything the world has ever experienced. And I base that just on my study of the subject, my study of the UFO phenomenon, my study of the Bible. I have no other evidence to put forward other than that. That's my beliefs based on my years of research.
Well, that's pretty much my opinion too, Mr. Castile. So thank you very much, and great show, Kevin.
All right. Thanks for the call. 623-444-5889 if you have a question or a comment. We have a flash message from the United Kingdom and from John. It says, many UFOs have been seen in the area of the Bermuda Triangle. Even Columbus saw them. Do you really believe that these craft travel through space, or is it more like kind of an Alice in Wonderland through the looking glass kind of thing? Why have they never attacked us before now? So what do you think?
Well, again, like we were talking about, whether they're physical or spiritual creatures, you know, he's asking whether they're flying in space, like we normally think of space, or in through other dimensions. I think, you know, it's both. It's all of the above. They can do anything they want in those terms. They can cross from the physical to the immaterial anytime they want. It's like crossing the street to them. It's second nature to them. And why they haven't attacked us yet? I mean, that's not their purpose to attack us. I mean, I think their sense of things moves a lot more slowly than the mortal sense of things does. And it's not like they're laying in wait for some terrible moment. They're guiding our destiny. They're building us collectively to some very positive, life-affirming outcome. And and like I said before, I think they're fighting for us actively against the forces of evil as well. They're guiding us along and fighting evil for us as they go. So I don't look forward to any kind of attack from the aliens. I just don't think they're going to be they're not a hostile source.
Well, we come back to Sodom and Gomorrah. They certainly were hostile to those folks.
Right. Well, I'm taking sort of a liberal attitude that most of mankind is lovable and loved by God and worthy of salvation. I mean, I realize the people in Sodom and Gomorrah probably got what they deserved. And I imagine they didn't like getting it, but I don't know. What can I say? That's the breaks.
I like that. That's the breaks. Well, I think what it does show is that, let's assume that all that stuff we've just talked about with Abraham and seeing three men coming down the road, and he talks to them. They have dinner with him. Two of them go down to Sodom and Gomorrah. One of them he recognizes as the Lord. I think there's this that we can say about it. First of all, there are a lot of people who cannot conceive of the idea that angels may look just like you and me. And yet, those same people tuck a Bible up under their arm and run to church every Sunday. And that story is in there. If that's an inspired story, if that's something that is from the mind of God, then there you have it. Those are two angels that look just like human beings. And then they cannot conceive of the idea that God can take on a human form and walk around and look like us. And, well, there you have it in that story. We have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Sean Castillo. Some of you were calling during the break, and we don't answer the phone during the break. But the telephone line is open at 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. If you have a question or a comment for Sean, that is the number to call. It could be, you may have to call several times to get through, but you keep dialing and you'll make it, all right? And we're having to use a backup system here tonight, and so I'm not seeing the light flash every time, and you'll have to forgive me if you call and I don't see the light flash. But we'll have that fixed by tomorrow night. All right, Sean. You know, I was saying that you know, there are a lot of things in that book that people call the Bible that are very, very different from the notions they have sometimes. Now, one of the things, since your book is about UFOs and their occupants, one of the things that's pretty interesting is a story that is in Ezekiel, where you have a, quote, angel, no wings, flies a machine down to earth, lands it, gets out, has a crystal over his head, like maybe a space helmet, is wearing a one-piece, very shiny suit, and talks with Ezekiel. Very, very different from the notion a lot of people have about angels.
Yeah, well, I agree with what you're saying about human-looking aliens also functioning as angels. I mean, I think that's a, you know, that's a rock-hard truth right there. In fact, the next issue of UFO Magazine should be out in 2 or 3 weeks. I have an article in there where I interviewed a man named Phil Croft, who's a very interesting abductee case. He's actually an elderly man in his 70s, and he used to work for the Los Angeles Times. He was on the Metro desk at the Los Angeles Times, and when the riot happened in L.A. in 1992, he and some of the other reporters there shared a Pulitzer Prize for their local coverage of the riots and so forth. But anyway, after he had retired, he began to have bedroom visitations, and he was taken to a ship he thinks was on the dark side of the moon. And there were you know, alien-looking creatures there, you know, typical grays and stuff. But there are also very human-looking entities there as well. And he meets one that he calls Paul, who looked like a normal human being, a young man in his mid-30s or something. And Paul begins to reveal to him that he had been Croft's guardian angel since Croft was a child. He had been there in many different forms, but he had always been there guarding over Croft. And Croft, you know, was saying, well, he was basically an atheist. He still is an atheist. But he does believe in this human-looking guardian angel named Paul.
Hmm.
And, Bud Hopkins' last book, Witnessed, Sight Unseen. Sight Unseen came out like 4 or 5 years ago. And there's lots of research in there about human-looking aliens. He thinks they're very much a living part of the experience. There are these human-looking aliens as all over the place. Sometimes they'll have telepathic powers. Sometimes they'll be able to look into a person and see that person's life history and so forth. But outwardly, they look entirely human. They drive cars. They hold down jobs, stuff like that. So you don't want to scare people to death.
I want to get into that a little bit, but let's take this phone call, and then we'll get into that. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin and Sean. This is Dale from Mississippi.
Hi, Dale.
How are you tonight?
Outstanding.
Well, that's great. I wanted to ask Sean a question about his opinion on this. He mentioned that he thought that some of these beings were angelic. However, according to Scripture, I think it's 2 Corinthians 11:14 or something like that, it says that angels can't die. However, if there were actual beings in the Roswell crash and they died, then they couldn't have been angelic.
Okay, what do you say about that?
Well, yeah. First of all, I'm just not a big believer in Roswell. I'm sorry. I hope that doesn't disappoint a lot of people, because I've done interviews and stories about Roswell, but I'm just not a big believer in that one. But in terms of they're leaving bodies behind. One theory that gets kicked around is they didn't actually die. What they did was leave their shell behind, the physical shell that they're being occupies, being different than their actual identity, their actual beingness in the world. You know, they just left some shells behind for some reason, and walked away, scot-free in their terms. But again, I've read books on Roswell. I've interviewed experts about Roswell. It's just not something I'm a big believer in. I don't think it's very logical that they would crash their UFOs either. I don't think that's a very believable thing. I'm like Dale from Mississippi here. I think they're above that sort of thing. They don't crash their ships, and they don't leave dead bodies behind. So I really don't know what Roswell was.
Hmm.
It could be disinformation. It could be any number of things.
Yeah. Okay, well, I appreciate you taking my call.
Dale, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
All right, isn't that also the explanation that Christianity ascribes to death, that death is not death, it's just the soul is leaving the body, but the soul continues on?
That's true. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think this is the end of it. There's something once our body shuts down, there's something else.
So it could be said then that you can't die.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. You said that you don't put much stock in the stories of crashed UFOs, and yet there are witnesses, not just the Roswell case. There are witnesses around the world that have seen them go down.
Yeah, I know. Keksberg, I know. There's a Russian case similar to the Roswell case. I don't know. It just puts too much of a physical limiting. Delineation. I don't know what the exact word would be, but I just think that they're higher than that. They transcend that sort of thing. They don't crash their ships and they don't leave bodies behind.
Well, then those that are crashing, because they're military people who are beginning to talk and nations beginning to talk and saying that they have recovered crashed craft, those that crash must not be the angels.
Well, I don't know. I just have to, like Whitley Strieber says, with a lot of the subject of UFOs and aliens, you have to have the discipline of mind to be willing not to know, to just leave things unanswered and not to try to wrap your mind around everything like it can be answered.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these things are just going to be a total unknown until they're explained to us. I keep thinking it's like they're going to gather us all together in like a kindergarten and explain these things to us. All these things that we struggle to learn on our own, they're just going to be happily teaching them to us. And maybe they'll answer that question, too. They'll answer what the heck all the crashed ships were about.
Well, one of the theories about Roswell that I've heard right here on this show, I've heard it from more than one guest, is that that was sort of a gift, a message, if you will, to us, and that it was sort of a staged craft by them, a staged crash by them, and that we didn't bring it down. And that I've heard the theory that we don't have the technology to bring one down, and therefore, if one came down, it had to have been them staging it.
Yeah, I talked to a guy named Nick Redfern a couple of months ago, and he was saying that exact same thing, that they staged it to somehow give us a sense of confidence, to show to us that they're not infallible, they're not so high above us that they can't suffer harm or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was a psychological move on their part to make them less scary to us, to make us less afraid of them. To sort of say, we can be mortals too. We can suffer these things too. But again, that would involve a certain amount of deception, and I wouldn't want to think of angelic forces operating that way. But that is a theory that's out there, yeah.
All right. Let me take a look at the clock here, because I don't want to... Yeah, we've got time to get into this. What role, if any... do you think these UFOs may play in bringing about the end of whatever era we are in now?
Well, like I said before, they're leading us. They're leading us through this step-by-step process, the process that's been laid out for us in the prophets, but which we are, at this point in time, cannot possibly understand. They're leading us through this process for mercy's sake. Whatever the divine plan is, we're not just expected to arrive at it by ourselves. They've got this weeding process. A lot of abductees talk about the idea that they know they're being programmed for some kind of future moment when certain skills and things they've learned from the aliens are going to come into play. So when the appropriate time comes, the abductees will be pre-positioned where they're supposed to be and ready to carry out the tasks that they've been assigned. So I think that's, the abductee process is a big part of that. Because, you know, some of the mortals who are chosen ones, abductees, whatever, are going to be, you know, working the rest of humanity through this process. Why it has to be this way, I don't know. Why it has to be so painful at times, I don't know. But it's a process that's been predetermined, and essentially we're all a part of it. We're all going to have some kind of role to play. And certain abductees have been chosen to play leadership roles, supporting roles, that kind of thing. There's a definite plan there. If we knew the details of it, you know, we wouldn't be the limited mortals that we are.
Well, then that brings up the question of free will.
Right.
Because if someone is among the chosen, they didn't decide to be. It just happened to them. And maybe you've got someone out here that would like to be, and they don't get chosen. So how do you work through that?
Well, that's just one of those moral conundrums, again, that people just can't solve. I mean, it's just not in mortal consciousness to have answers to those kind of questions. I mean, I believe that, you know, everyone experiences life as though they have free will. If you make a mistake, you certainly, you know, pay the consequences of a mistake, so, I mean, but there's a harmony between the two things. There's a harmony between predestination and a harmony between free will. There's some kind of balance in the middle there that only God really understands. And you just have to, you know, work, hope for the best. I did read a case, one of David Jacobs' abductee cases, was this young man who was having continual abduction experiences. And he didn't want them anymore. They were so upsetting to him that he simply wanted to be cut loose from being a chosen one. He wanted to end his status as a chosen one. So he taped a letter to his leg, and he would sleep with his letter taped to his leg every night. And finally they came to get him for you know, abduction thing, and they looked at the letter, and they said, sure, we'll cut you loose if you want to get cut loose. They said, some of these procedures that we've done to you can be reversed. Some of them can't, but, you know, if you don't want to be part of this, that's up to you. So they do allow for free will in those terms. If you want out badly enough, I think they'll give you out.
All right, we have to step out for just a moment, and we'll be back, folks, after this break. We'll have time for one or two calls at 623-444-5889. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We have time for one, maybe two calls at 623-444-5889. Sean, I want to, in these last few moments, I want to get to a subject that's really probably not in your book, but it's something that I know because of the many books you've written, you've given some thought to. What about this whole idea, this topic, that's really boiling out there right now about UFO disclosure? A lot of people are really putting the pressure on the Obama administration to make disclosure about UFOs. Some people say they are hopeful that it will happen. Some people say they're not. What about you? Do you think there is going to be any disclosure? And then your reasons for yes or no.
Well, I wish I could sound like an optimist about that, but no, I don't think there's going to be any disclosure. I don't think Obama can do any differently than his predecessors can about that. They always say, you know, we don't really know what the president knows. The president may not be in the loop about what the government knows about UFOs and aliens. I think there are a lot of people out there, a lot of genuine abductees, who would give anything to know what the government knows about it, you know, to get some kind of solid factual information on what they've been going through for, you know, most of their lives. I mean, whether the, you know, the experience is traumatic or not, whether it's painful or not, I mean, you still have to know the truth about it. And one of those sources of truth would be, you know, the government who's been studying the phenomenon for who knows how long. But in terms of actually, you know, Obama making disclosures about UFOs, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, they say that Kennedy was about to say something about UFOs, and that's why he was assassinated in 1963. That could be the case. There could be some kind of rule of silence that not even the president can get around. And there are people who say the government may not even know any more than the general population does. I don't believe that, but there are people who do think that.
Well, I'll say this. If, as you say, they are angelic, then I would say the government may not know any more than the rest of us.
Uh-huh.
All right, let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Okay, the caller has hung up. All right. Telephone number is 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. And if you wish to call, you had better do so right now because we're rapidly running out of time. The reason I say the government would not know more, most likely, if it is, as you say, and these are all angelic, the reason they may not know more, it would be because they don't crash, they don't die, or at least they don't leave any bodies behind. And therefore, the government may not have anything to really study. But you know what kind of puzzles me about this is that we have from people that are on the inside lots of testimony of having worked on extraterrestrial craft to try and back engineer them.
Right, yeah. Yeah, of course, you got that with Bob Lazar, and also Corso's book that came out, I think, in 97, was all about that, about how the day after Roswell, how we took the stuff at Roswell and created all these different technologies. I don't know. One thing that Whitley Strieber is always fond of saying is his theory about all this is that maybe they went to the government at some point, like when the Majestic 12 stuff was going on. The aliens went to the government, and they were so dissatisfied with the government's response, they decided to go to the people instead and began this abduction program of just grassroots regular folks. But that's an interesting theory, but it doesn't fit with my own biblical ideas. But
would your biblical ideas be changed if there was incontrovertible evidence of a downed and recovered craft?
No, I don't think so. I think that if such a thing actually happened, a craft was downed and bodies were left behind, they'd have a reason why. They could explain it in my spiritual terms. I wouldn't know what that was, but I'm sure they would have some kind of understanding. Like, you know, they've shown Whitley, and I think it was in the book either Communion or Transformation, this alien walks up to this, like, chest of drawers, and it pulls out a body. Like, you know, like a body that would fit around it like clothes, like tight-fitting clothes. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their sense of what a body is very elastic. It's something that they can take on and take off and put back on again. It's not like we think of a body, like we're totally trapped inside this mortal shell. They can walk in and out of bodies as they choose, I think. And like, you know, we were talking with the lady from Mississippi. Maybe they left those shells behind for a reason, the physical shells of their bodies, and then, you know, in their terms, walked away scot-free, unharmed. You know, there's all kinds of metaphysical mysteries involved in all this. You can't possibly, all you can do is theorize. You can't ever really know, you know what I'm saying?
Have you considered the possibility that what we may be dealing with are not angelic, but just really advanced extraterrestrials that ancient people interpreted in religious terms?
Right. Yeah, that's sort of like accidentally they saw us and they interacted with us, and then sort of inadvertently we began to call them gods.
Yeah, or angels.
Right. That's sort of the Von Däniken thing, the cargo cult thing, that they never really intended to be worshipped. They were just here doing whatever their business was. I don't know. That's another way to look at it, you know. We might be accidentally worshiping them, or we might be intended to worship them. You know, in either case, we've got a lot to learn about the subject. We've got a lot of mysteries we don't know.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take this call very quickly. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Maxwell, Pennsylvania.
All right, what's on your mind this evening?
Your guest is right in line, and the government is not disclosing everything.
Okay. How is he online?
Keep going. Appreciate the show. Keep going. Over and out.
Okay. All right. So you are right about them being angelic, I guess, and the government is not disclosing everything.
Huh. That's what the guy was saying?
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad to get a voice of support out there.
Yeah. Well, maybe in fact they are angelic, and maybe in fact the government does know that. Maybe that's what they fear.
Hmm. Yeah, if the government knew they were angelic, I mean, I think they would tend to be intimidated by them. I mean, I don't think the angelic forces would necessarily approve of all the things the government does. And the government would have to come up against a moral force that was stronger than it was. I mean, you know, our defense.
Well, even we mortals do not approve of everything the government does.
Right, but we don't have like the ships and all those other powers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine they could be very threatened by an angelic force that didn't necessarily answer to their political ethics that sort of was transcendent of their political ethics.
And it could be.
You also have the problem of the angelic force picking and choosing among the people. I mean, that's not a very dramatic, democratic, politically correct idea that God only loves certain people, God only chooses certain people. There's no way they can go in front of the American public and say, well, God wants to take a third of Americans and then the rest can, you know, go hang or whatever.
It also poses some real problems for major portions of theology. There are certain theological writers that would say, yeah, that's right, and then there are probably more that would say that's wrong. All right, Sean, we have reached the end of the show. I appreciate you for being with us this evening. Stay on the phone line with me for just a moment, if you will. And ladies and gentlemen, that's it for this evening. We have, I think, Tim Beckley is my guest tomorrow evening, and you want to be sure and be here for that. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.